Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Wednesday is Trends Day on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, and joining me to talk about some of the developing trends in scheme is the founder and CEO of First Down Playbook, former NFL coach, Charlie Coyner. Charlie, good to be back here for another week talking trends.
Absolutely, Keith. Yep, good to be back.
Joining us as well is Zach Dunn of USA Football, who is our content coordinator and an analyst himself. Zach, I'm excited to hear about some of the things you're bringing to the table today.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for having me.
All right, so we're going to start this off with something I mentioned last week, and we didn't have the time to cover, but looking at four strong concepts, and Zach, you and I have talked about this a little bit, definitely some history behind it, but we're seeing this develop as a trend that more and more teams are using.
Yeah, Keith, so last year I cut up the Chiefs' whole season, and one thing I noticed was they had a lot of 4-by-1 and what I call four strong stuff, where they're putting four receivers to one side, and they don't do a lot with different concepts, but it's the way they get to it. So they have one play they call super spacing, where it backsides the hitch, number three's on a corner, number two on a snag, number one on a snag, and they'll swing the running back wide. And it's just, they just read it like spacing, you know, just one, two, three, four. They also run post wheel stick, which what area guys call a 6-18 post wheel, where number one will be on a post, number two will run the wheel, number three will run the stick route, and the running back from the backfield will run the flat route. And one thing I saw them doing a lot this year that they've kind of done is they're running a lot of 4-by-1 stuff or four strong stuff with all go special. So one thing I've noticed them do is they will either swing the running back, you know, like tear motion, like quick motion, or they'll go empty and it'll look like they're reloading, but instead of reloading, he'll just keep on going all the way across the formation and the quarterback will snap the ball. So like against the Raiders, they hit all go special with the running back swinging strong for a touchdown. So, you know, one was on a go and two and three ran switch verticals and the running back was swinging wide. And, you know, anytime you go four strong, you're just absolutely pushing all the coverage and, you know, you're flooding every single bit of pattern match. You're just kind of draining the coverage out because the player that's responsible for four or the first crosser, you know, the user of the backside weak hook or backside curl flat player, now he's having to push strong and match the new number four, which is lined up as the number three in the trips. So what that does is it causes a lot of coverage busts because they're trying to push it late, you know, 3-4 push, you know, they're changing who the weak hook player is, they're changing who the curl flat player is, and it's causing a ton of coverage busts. And really, they're not doing anything special. You know, they're just putting a guy strong. And most time, it's the running back on a swing route or a flat route, and really, he's just a check down guy. It's kind of like, hey, if they do match it, we got somebody in the flat now. You know, just check the ball down to him. But they've been running a lot of it now, and they're just dressing it up nice with formations. And I mean, when you go empty and you reload, I mean, first of all, when you empty, the defense has to get to an empty check. Then they think you're reloading, which means you're bringing the back into the backfield. But really, as you're reloading him, he just swings back on motion, and now all of a sudden you have four strong. So the defense is going from an empty check back to the 3-by-1 check, back to, oh crap, you know, we got four strong. So now we've got to get a 3-4 push alert. So, I mean, it's really driving defenses crazy. And I haven't seen a team answer it yet. I mean, every single week it seems like they're having a lot of four strong stuff, and they're getting a lot of teams issues with it. The Patriots have ran quite a bit of it this year too. I saw them run the same exact thing that the Chiefs ran last week against the Raiders. They ran the all go special with the back swinging wide. They ran that down in about the 25 going in towards the end zone this week against the Jets. They hit the shallow crosser for completion. They've also ran some of the 6-18 post wheel. So, I mean, I know Oakland ran some four strong stuff this past weekend. So, you know, as people are getting the more pattern match stuff, I think we're starting to see more four strong stuff, trying to drain out their coverage and making that number four player weak, you know, have to slide strong and match a route that's kind of hard for him to match on the fly and cause the defense to talk on the fly. And, you know, when you're talking on the fly and you're getting from check to check, you know, there's just going to be coverage bust.
Yeah, and I think that's the key, and I'm sure, Charlie, you would agree. The more you force them to talk and communicate, the more opportunity is that they're wrong.
Yeah, and you know, a million years ago, and I can remember it was probably 2002 or three at the Bears, we would, you know, try to get the back, be the four strong deal. But it was really to get the ball to the back. And, you know, we weren't as advanced as what Zach's talking about with it, meaning that now the back is most of the time just window dressing. I mean, you're trying to, you know, actually stretch some defender over there so you can do something with the other, you know, with the other receivers. So just a progression, and I haven't noticed as much of it as Zach has, but I'll be keeping an eye out for it. But yeah, the thing is, anything different, yes, as long as it's not so different that it doesn't screw you up, then that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, so one more thing I would add to that, Keith, is, you know, when they go four strong, they're doing no sort of, you know, there's nothing to do with the coverage read for the most part. It's all progression read, because when you put four strong, coverages get all busted up, and, you know, you don't want a guy trying to read coverage. You just kind of want, you know, one, two, three, four. You don't want to be reading coverages, because once you push four strong, then every single coverage is going to look different.
Exactly. And as I mentioned, it's about forcing the opponent to have to communicate, to make changes on the fly. I mean, you know, your explanation of going empty and then back in the backfield and then swinging back out that way, I mean, that causes a lot of problems for people. And we saw that too. We've been mentioning the use of unbalance, seeing more and more unbalance this season. We saw it again from Auburn, not necessarily something that's not typical from them, but used in an up-tempo environment. So now you think you add that to the mix, an offense that is moving at a high pace. There are some personnel considerations within that play as well, but you saw that they had two guys running open in the end zone for a touchdown, just going to the short side of the unbalanced look there. And Charlie, that was one you mentioned right away from this weekend that stuck out for you.
It did, and you just hit it on the head. I mean, it's real easy for us to sit here on a Wednesday and talk about it after we looked at it. The thing that Gus Malzahn and his offense does to you is that, I mean, they just keep coming at you. And individual play, as you look at it, and that fact that you go like, well, come on, man, we ought to be able to handle that. But when it's play after play after play, and it's going about this fast, And it's forcing the defense to communicate. And you're playing at 4:00 in the afternoon in College Station, and it ain't exactly fall yet. You know, and you're getting an unbalanced formation, and you just got jet motion, and oh, there's two quarterbacks on the field. And so what it makes, back to the same thing we were just saying, the unbalanced formations, we're seeing so much of it because everybody's got 20 yards. Everybody's got only so much time that they can meet with their kids, their players. They're still going to class. They still got girlfriends. There's so much going on that you are forcing the defense to concentrate every second. The days of lining up and looking at an eye pro, right, are gone for the defense. I mean, that just doesn't happen anymore. So now it's not only can you recognize it, and can you recognize it at a fast pace when your tongue's hanging out and you're tired. But what we saw happen on Saturday was an unbalanced formation. For those of you who are listening, maybe didn't see it. You know, Auburn came out, they had two quarterbacks on the field, the starting quarterback lined up all the way out to the right. They were in a empty type formation, motion the back across and jet, and essentially just had an unbalanced set to the right. The tackle tight end to the right hand side was covered up. But when they booted out the nub tight end, which was a real tight end. No excuse really for that guy to be running free in the end zone. It wasn't like he was wearing 78, he was wearing 47. They ended up having two people open in the end zone. And so, as a defensive coach, you know, it's got to be hard when you want to be creative, you want to be the next Brent Venables, you want to draw up all this stuff. But really, when you're playing Auburn, you're like, I hope we can get lined up, communicate, cover all the elements.
Well, that's definitely some of the advantages of unbalance, really at any level. I know that was something I loved to use at the high school level in create some extra gaps too with more guys across the ball and use a lot of shifts and movements. And for me, it went to that concept of I'm making them communicate quite a bit. And I looked at it as anytime you have that movement, you know, shifts, motions, you have the unbalance and you're causing the communication to come into place. It's three things, three opportunities for them to be wrong. It's recognize, number one, communicate it, number two, and make the right adjustment, number three. So just things that add to the stress of the defense. And like you mentioned, Charlie, it's, you know, the NFL guys, they got time, although I think the NFLPA limits some of that for them too. But, you know, high school kids, college kids, it becomes a challenge.
It does. And we talked about this yesterday on the, you know, the All-22 Tuesday. It's that the other thing, though, from a defensive perspective, when you start your first day, and here I am telling defensive coaches like coach, and please, this is said humbly, but, I mean, to teach the rules of the game, regardless if you're teaching, you know, youth football or middle school or high school, it's important that they understand the rules of the game, who's on, who's off, who's eligible, what the sideline ref, you know, the side judge can help you with. All of those type of things give you a chance because, once again, we mentioned this yesterday, there's so many different ways that you can get into that unbalanced formation. So you're not going to be able to get them ready for it. That's like trying to get a defense ready for every formation out there. So you better give them rules that they can look at. And if you're a corner on the backside and you see a big old 78, nobody else outside of him, when you see only two people on that side of the center, not only do you recognize it, but you better be able to get an alert to the far side over there because guess what? There's something going on strange on that side too. So a lot of lessons to be learned about this, regardless of what level you're coaching football.
Absolutely. And you mentioned rules there in a play that we've been seeing, concept I should say, because it's taking on multiple forms now. But the concept is getting receivers downfield specifically to block defenders and throwing the ball low to somebody else and either timing that up so that if it is a catch behind or over the line of scrimmage that those receivers aren't illegal or again, understanding the rules and running that route actually at or slightly behind the line of scrimmage. And so we've seen a number of these come into play. We've been talking a little bit more the past couple weeks about that second level type of screen is what we've been calling it. Again, the receivers don't have routes. They're not in any kind of progression. They are specifically going out to block. And the ball being thrown to a shallow crosser, we saw week one, we talked about it in terms of the flat route instead of a bubble. We've seen back out of the backfield in Alabama, I believe last week. And now this week we have another wrinkle added to it. But, you know, right in the Georgia-Notre Dame game, we saw both teams running it. And so from a bunch set, we had basically the picks being run by the two of the bunch players. We had a guy go in motion to give a clue to zone or man. And those guys were coming across, you know, initially you might think they're going to run shallows, but they were looking up both of those linebackers essentially to pick them. And, you know, when I saw it in the game, I remember texting you, Charlie, that I thought that was, wow, what an illegal play. But then when we looked at it again, we were looking at it on All 22 Tuesday, they did a good job with their technique to actually make that legal.
Right, and here we are again. We've got a remote, and we're running it back and forth, and those guys are out there that are my age, and all the fans are screaming at them, and pretty big game on Saturday night if you're refereeing the Georgia-Notre Dame game. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. I guess, that, you know, as we looked at it week in and week out, just a lot of different ways to accomplish it. I mean, you start talking about, is the guy over the line of scrimmage? You know, we see Notre Dame run the receiver behind the line of scrimmage, and people have been doing that for a while, but it just kind of tied into my brain about how we're seeing the bubble, you know, be behind and the blockers, you know, they're out there, and then all of a sudden it's a bubble slant or something like that off the RPO. You know, we talk about things in segment on the show quite a bit. So right now we're talking about the mesh. But heck, next week they'll be running some kind of RPO off of that mesh, and they'll be reading that poor guy that has been talked to all week about looking up the crosser, right? And then he'll collision the crosser or run the crosser, and that'll be the read for the quarterback on an RPO. So at the end of the day, offenses are getting so much more sophisticated, and which is, you know, hats off to them because they don't have any more time to practice than the defenses do.
Yeah, and then we saw it two versions from Notre Dame. Zach, I'll let you go through and describe those two. One, again, was kind of off that mesh look, and then a different one that we haven't talked about yet this year.
Yeah, Keith, so I'll talk about the one that we haven't talked about yet. And so it was third and – I believe it was third and 14. Notre Dame was on, like, the 44-yard line going in. And they went in a 2x2 set with the running back offset to the left. And what they did was – they ran the halfback on the old Texas route, the old halfback angle route. So, you know, he comes out of the backfield hot, screaming like he's running the flat, puts his left foot in the ground, cuts back across the green, back right down the line of scrimmage. It's not like a true Texas route. I mean, he's not coming out at 45 degrees. He's coming right back down the line, once again, trying to make the play legal, catchable at the line of scrimmage or behind it. So, both number two receivers, they are releasing inside like they're going to run that mesh route, but then they are getting upfield and blocking their first threat. So, you know, if it's cover three, they're blocking both of the buzz backers or safety. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to just, you know, let that running back catch the ball right there over the middle, right there over top of the center, and have two blockers right there in front of him and let him scream upfield. And they ran it for about a 13-yard gain because it ended up bringing up a fourth and one in which Notre Dame didn't convert. But they've been running that play for 2 or 3 years now since Chip Long got there, and they've had a lot of success with it. They hit Syracuse with it for a touchdown in 2018, and they hit Clemson with it in the playoff game last year as well for a pretty big game. But I saw a play similar to it, though, a few years ago. The Chiefs run it, and they call it escort, where they'll actually release, like, the whole line pretty much down the field. So the running back will come out like the Texas route, cut back across the green, come right back on the line, and he will catch the ball, and he'll have all five linemen and, you know, one or two receivers out in front of him blocking. So, I mean, it's a really cool screen concept. Once again, they caught Georgia in man coverage, and what happened was the backer covering the running back out of the backfield got caught up in the wash and ended up trailing the running back and made a tackle late. So that's just another way. You know, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, with getting the quarterback very easy throws. And, you know, it's third 14 against the top five defense in the country. You don't want him dropping back and trying to just read out the coverage and make a 15-yard completion. You know, let him just dump the ball off, a short throw, try to pick up maybe 10 yards, go for it on fourth, or just have a better punt.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And all three of the plays we mentioned here, again, receivers getting downfield to block with a – you know, what appears a route, but really is still at or behind the line of scrimmage to another receiver. Definitely a trend we've talked about here all season long. In three third down situations, we had a third and six for Georgia. We had a third and 14 and a third and nine for Notre Dame. And all three of them were converted. And, you know, to me, I look at this as the concept in general of getting a guy into space and then having somebody block lanes for him or block defenders for him so he can do something with the ball is certainly a good strategy for how you convert third downs. You know, I'm thinking, and Zach, you and I were talking earlier about this today, you know, implementing that and teaching that at the high school level certainly can pay some huge dividends as you face those situations. We end up in them, right? There's not a whole heck of a lot of calls you'd love on a third down and 12 or a third down and 14. But, you know, it might happen one or two times a game. And we had the full range there. We had a third and medium, third and long, third and extra long, all converted with this type of concept.
Yeah, Keith, something I'll add to that. You made the point earlier is that the best thing about these shallow screens and these, you know, halfback Texas screens is that it doesn't look like the, you know, the now screens or, you know, the quick tunnel screens or, you know, defensive backs and the defense can read it immediately. Hey, you know, left tackle, one count, he's out. These look like a pass the whole way. So they're taking either their spot drops, you know, or their match drops, or they're trying to chase crushes and man here. You know, they're not seeing it now. So these are like late screens. So this isn't something the defense can just trigger now, and they can just hop on the screen. This is something where, you know, they're trying to read out a pattern here, and then, you know, oh, crap, this is a screen.
And again, I think it comes down to how much time do you have to practice everything you need to get done. And, you know, screen with linemen take a lot of time. And there are those indicators. There's guys running to the ball. And, hey, let's be honest, the, you know, athleticism of the defenders is much greater than the offensive linemen in space. So, Charlie, just as a concept for third downs, your thoughts on what we're seeing develop here as far as a trend with these second level type of screens?
No, I like it. I think that what Zach just said is exactly right, that we oftentimes have an athletic quarterback in high school or middle school that he's not quite there yet to throw the ball down the field. And so I think that this is an excellent way for a coach to look and maybe model his offense around this. But I'm going to play devil's advocate here just for a little bit, because you just now started to touch on it, and you're exactly right. I mean, these, you know, we see these guys run these plays, and I hope that the coaches out there that are listening understand that maybe some of them do, maybe things have changed, but odds are they didn't put that play in this week. I mean, there may be versions of that play. I know in the NFL when I was there, we would run a play maybe for 3 weeks until our coordinator felt like it was ready. And you go like, well, how can it take that long? Well, it's a risk and reward, because if you run that play and it's not ready, then it's not only going to be a bad play or incompletion, it might be a pick, it might be a hurt quarterback, it might be this or that. So I just want to caution anyone out there that's sitting there, maybe you're 1-2, 1-3 right now, don't go throw your whole offense out and think that you've got to run something that you hear about or see on TV. No, understand, like Keith just said, there is a lot of practice that goes in. So pick one or two plays that you really like, you think fits your scheme, and run them a lot, run it over and over again to get it ready. And certainly don't try to go in there and take 8 or 9 of them, because you're just going to be your own worst enemies.
100% true, Charlie. I agree with everything there. And yeah, it is about being able to practice those things. But not to say you can't get some of those things ready, but make sure it's ready before you call it. So heading over to the defensive side of the ball, you know, always looking for trends there too. And we've talked a ton this offseason about, you know, the Sims and the Creepers and, you know, match coverage and those kinds of things. We saw an old stunt come up, and potentially we're looking to see, is this one that kind of catches on and becomes a trend here as we move forward? And it's known as the coffee house stunt. Zach, I'll let you give a little bit of history on that one.
Yeah, so the coffee house stunt has been around for a while. I mean, you know, I don't know the full history, but I know I've seen it in Belichick playbooks back with this time with the Giants back in the 80s. So it's, and, you know, I'm sure he got it from one of those guys that he coached under when he was a young guy. Pretty much what it is a linebacker or even a defensive lineman, but it usually comes from a linebacker, you know, they'll kind of like mug up, you know, they'll come up and they'll mug up the A gap or, you know, mug the B gap. And what will happen is, you know, they will put their foot in the ground. I think they're going to rush, turn their head back like they're going to drop in the coverage, wait about a half second to a second, then they'll come back down that B gap again. And what happens is, so say on the B gap and say a guard, you know, they're like 5-0 protection here, and a guard's looking to set on him. Well, when he sets on him and he sees that backer turn his head and turn his body back towards the field, he thinks he's dropping, so he's going to go look for work. And, you know, most time they'll work back to that nose and to try to get a rip shot on that nose guard. So it happened last night in the Bears game. A backer did the coffee house stunt. He came up in the B gap, sugared it, and ran it. Well, what happened was the guard, you know, popped at him, saw him turn his head and his back. So the guard went and worked back down to the nose, and before you know it, the backer came right back on the B gap untouched. And it's, to me, it's something cheap. I mean, it's not real hard to install. It's something you can install very quick and easy. It's something that can break down a protection quickly. Like I said, it's been around forever, but it seems like it's kind of making a reappearance here lately, the past year or two.
Yeah, and it does seem like it's a good fit with a lot of the simulated blitzes, the creepers, those kind of things where, you know, you just fit it in there as basically a constrainer counter to guys getting used to seeing you drop out, and now you do that to them, and again, causing more problems for the defense. Charlie, those offensive guys always get the chalk last. What would you do to stop that?
Well, I watched it, and I actually saw that earlier today. And the thing that jumped in, and we probably haven't been given it enough credit, some of the things we're talking about, you know, why people get lined up to some of these things offensively. We don't know that maybe what they saw the week before that, right? They saw the same formation, and they did something that set up the play that you, Zach, and I are talking about this week. But when I saw that, I went, that's poor guard for the Redskins. He's seen that thing probably 400 times this week, and the coach has been talking to him about, you know, he's been on about, you know, he will get up in there, he's going to mug, he's going to pull out, and you know, this other cat that the center's trying to block is really good, so you need to give him help. And I just looked at it, and I'm like, we're set, you know, he was set up. What can he do but shrug afterwards and go back and apologize to the poor quarterback? But, yeah, I think more than anything else, instinctively, you can't take your eye off of your original responsibility. Having coached the offensive line, you know, we've seen it even with running backs this year. I forget, there was a game where the running back thought his guy wasn't going to come, and guess what? You know, he thought he had his man coverage. He's that back took off, so the backer came and sacked him. So you can't assume that what you're seeing is what you saw. You better keep at least one eye on that guy while you're helping the center. That's going to happen to you in the NFL.
Then the last thing we've been tracking on, and not necessarily a scheme trend, but I see coaches more and more handling the time management differently. I mean, there certainly was, I guess, kind of the book way to do it, but you saw a good use of clock management from John Harbaugh and the Ravens.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And first of all, I have tremendous respect for John Harbaugh. You know, having known him for long back when I was coaching in the NFL, he was a special teams guy. And he was even a head coach for a couple of years there. So, and we had Bobby April on your coaching coordinator podcast last year. He makes the point that, you know, special teams coaches are game managers. And so, you know, it's just kind of amazing that more of them haven't been given an opportunity to be a head coach. But for anyone that did not see the game, something very small, and it was lost on me until somebody pointed it out, to be honest. But they, you know, they scored the touchdown, Baltimore did, with 2:01 left in the game, and they went for two and didn't get it. And so had they kicked the ball off deep, then what would have happened would have been, Kansas City would have fielded the ball, and they would have lost an extra opportunity to stop the clock. So Harbaugh called for a drop kick, a drop punt, and where the punter came out, dropped the ball, punted it straight up in the air, or straight up in the air as it could, and forced Kansas City into a fair catch. And when they did that, they maintained not only the timeout that they had, but they also bought themselves an extra play that 1 second gave. So that is a very isolated thing that, kind of like the fair catch kick thing that maybe gets used more 30 years. But to me, what it just pointed out is what great game management, the head coach being focused on the big picture, not worried about, you know, the quarterback's read or the linebacker not covering number three out of the backfield or what happened on the last special team play. And so I was just really impressed because, you know, the NFL, man, something like that can give you a chance to win a football game and at every level. So, you know, a lot of coaches are, you know, tied up into coaching a position or tied up into coaching a side of the ball. But if you're a head coach out there, there is a lot of advantages you can give your football team if you're just, you know, in addition to that or just only that, focusing on game management.
Well, guys, the process starts all over again tomorrow night, Thursday night football, a big weekend of football coming up here. So I look forward to see what trends we uncover in this next week and appreciate all the work you guys are doing. You can follow Charlie on First Down Playbook at FD Playbook on Twitter. We do our All 22 Tuesday, which is a video, and we cover four plays. And check out blogs.firstdownplaybook.com for more of their content. On the USA Football side, go to blogs.usafootball.com. We include some video of all these plays we've talked about in our show notes, and Zach will be writing a couple posts this week specifically on some of these plays. So, Charlie and Zach, thanks again for another great week, and I look forward to it again next Wednesday.
Absolutely, Keith. Browns Ravens this week. I know you won't sleep much. Sure to we'll have to pull a play or two off that one.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.